Today is Wednesday, March 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up...
The European Union seems to really be at the end of its tether. They're meeting throughout today in Strasbourg. The European Parliament is meeting there, or the Brexit negotiators are meeting there. And judging from what's being said publicly, there is just absolute exasperation.
That's reporter Catherine Field in Paris. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also ahead, rich and famous parents who are accused of buying their children entrance to some of the best universities in the U.S. were part of a multi-level, years-long scam. And pressure is growing on the administration of President Donald Trump to ground the Boeing 737 MAX jetliner following two fatal crashes. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, British lawmakers are set to vote today on whether Britain should leave the European Union without agreeing on any of the details of its departure. Prime Minister Theresa May opposes the so-called no-deal Brexit, but lawmakers in the House of Commons soundly rejected the latest version of May's plan yesterday. The outcome mirrored a January vote on an earlier plan, which May lost even more decisively. I spoke with reporter Catherine Field for reaction from European Parliament and the EU Brexit Steering Committee, which is meeting in the French city of Strasbourg.
The European Union seems to really be at the end of its tether. They're meeting throughout today in Strasbourg. The European Parliament is meeting there, or the Brexit negotiators are meeting there. And judging from what's been said publicly, there is just absolute exasperation. The European Union, 27 remaining member states, have spent the last 2 years negotiating this deal. It's not easy to get 27 different nations to agree to this withdrawal deal. So what's been said now is that they can't do any more. The chief negotiator has said there's no reason to extend the negotiations. He said what's for. He said it's now it's all over. He said if the UK wants to leave the European Union in an orderly manner, they have got this treaty. The treaty is on the table. It is the only treaty possible. So really what we're seeing is the European Union has in many ways already put in place all the measures they feel they need to protect the remaining members, and that means protecting their economies, protecting the movement of goods, services and people across that economic bloc. And really they're just saying, that's it, we can do no more.
So what then is the next step?
The next step really is, on the one hand, just wait and see what the UK comes back with. We've now had this week, for the second time, UK parliamentarians rejecting the deal that Prime Minister May came to with the European. They're just waiting to see what more will come. Certainly, there is a possibility that the United Kingdom could ask for an extension. Well, the European Union has always said, yes, we will grant or we will discuss an extension of the UK staying in the European Union if there's going to be an extension for a reason, i.e. if there's going to be elections in Britain or if they need extra time to get legislation through. But they've made it pretty clear that they're not just going to extend for the sake of extending so as the UK Parliament can keep discussing among themselves. So pretty much the ball is back in the court of the United Kingdom, and the March 29 deadline day for departing the European Union is getting closer as the clock ticks by.
Are there any circumstances in which the EU would agree to Brexit?
Well, the European Union has said they're sorry to see the UK leave. They feel that the UK is part of the European family. It has the same values. It has the same common history. And it is part of what makes Europe special. So it doesn't want the European Union to be one of 27 without the UK. But it is willing to see it leave if that's the will of the United Kingdom electorate. At the same time, though, the European Union realizes has to have a trading and a diplomatic agreement, a diplomatic relationship, if you like, with the United Kingdom. So they're trying to balance that at the same time as not really getting any clear signals coming from London.
Also, the EU Brexit Steering Committee, they're meeting there in the French city of Strasbourg. So are they all on the same page with the European Parliament?
they are all on the same page. One does now get the feeling that the exasperation level is seeping through to all departments in just the European Commission, the European Parliament. What we're really looking at now is the fact that at the end of next week, we've got the European Union Summit. So you're going to have 27 heads of state or government meeting to discuss the way forward. Now, it had been hoped that that would be a summit that could really concentrate on matters that are, if you like, the bread and butter of the European Union now, and that is climate change, income inequality across the bloc, the rise of China, and also its relationship with Africa. And now I'm even starting to hear some of the senior EU negotiators saying, we're not even going to be able to get to some of these issues because we're going to be bogged down again with talking about Brexit.
That was reporter Catherine Field in Paris. Well, rich and famous parents who are accused of buying their children entrance to some of the best universities in the U.S. were part of a multi-level, years-long scam that exploited a desire expressed worldwide to be educated at the best American institutions. William Rick Singer of the Newport Beach, California, has pleaded guilty to orchestrating the scam. Federal prosecutors say he earned more than $25 million by connecting parents and their children with test administrators and university sports coaches who took their cut for endorsing bogus applicants. Well, joining me now in the studio is VOA's Kathleen Strzok, who is covering this story. Thank you so much for covering this really big story, Kathleen. So first of all, how was this scam discovered, and really just how big is it?
So federal prosecutors in Massachusetts were looking at another case, they said, and about a year ago, they just started hearing things about this going on. So they said they kind of happened into it. How big is it? In practical terms, it's not huge. It only affects a handful of schools or less than 10 schools. But the impact of people being able to buy their children entrance to American universities is pretty enormous. The United States likes to think we're way better than that.
Now, of course, most parents want to do anything they can to help their child, but these parents have actually broken the law. So what are they facing?
So about 50 parents are facing charges. They have been indicted on charges of conspiracy to commit mail fraud. So basically, they're being charged with crimes of defrauding institutions, defrauding, this is a charge that's used widely with the Department of Justice, bribery, conspiracy to commit fraud.
Also, the students of these parents who are at these schools, what will happen to them?
Well, that's kind of up in the air right now. There's a lot of discussion today about should these students be kicked out. They got in under false pretenses. So the schools are looking at each individual case.
And looking at it from morality, from that standpoint, you know, you have these parents who have actually, they've lied, they've cheated, they've scammed, they've committed crimes. So really, what are they teaching their children?
Well, they are teaching their children to lie and scam and commit crimes. One of the offspring of a famous Hollywood actor went on YouTube after getting admitted to the University of Southern California. She's a big YouTube star. And she said, I'm going to talk to my deans and my teachers and talk to them about my schedule because I really want to party. I'm not really into the school part of it. So, if you have kids talking about getting into really good universities and then saying, I want to go and party, that tells you something about how they were brought up.
Also, what role did the colleges and universities play in this?
The Department of Justice says that the universities were actually a victim in this case. They had nothing to do with it. They weren't aware. The university connection is that many coaches at these universities, particularly sports coaches, were the ones who were able to be bought off. They were offered $10,000, $50,000, $75,000, more money than that to say, yes, this student should be part of our soccer team or swim team. Now, at U.S. universities, typically U.S. coaches are paid way more than even college presidents because they bring in a lot of revenue to the university. So they have a lot of clout to say, hey, this student, I want this student. And so admissions kind of signs off on it.
Very interesting. And also, What is entry into college? Just looking at this whole story, what is it really based on? Is it a level playing field for people who want to go to college?
That's a really good question, and that's what a lot of people are talking about today. Is it a level playing field? So typically, applying to college starts in your freshman year of high school from that very first day. The clock starts ticking because you want to get the best grade so you have a great numerical score at the end of it. You want to do community service. You want to have a sport. You want to play an instrument. These are all elements to help kids in the United States and around the world get into U.S. institutions. Now that it's so global, it is highly, highly competitive. So you have to have very good grades. You have to show that community service. You have to show that you have some other extracurricular talent. You have to score very high on your SATs and ACTs. And Harvard has said, Harvard's not part of this scandal, but they have said in the past that they could accept every single high school valedictorian in the country and still not have enough spots for everybody.
Wow. Okay. And also, just looking at the college students themselves, and what are they saying about this scam?
College students and high school students are a little annoyed about this. A lot of kids are going on social media, on Twitter, and they're saying, you know, I worked really hard. Maybe my parents don't have a lot of money, but I worked really hard and I'm smart. I didn't get a slot at that school, and I'm beginning to wonder whether that's why. Or, you know, is it fair that only people who have money, you know, the United States is, and democracy is supposed to be a meritocracy. United States is supposed to be better than this. And it kind of shows that there's a crack in that veneer.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you so much. Very interesting story. That's VOA's education correspondent, Kathleen Strzok. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Well, a European-wide grounding is now in place for the Boeing 737 MAX jetliner following two fatal crashes involving the new plane. Other countries, including Australia, India, and Singapore, have also barred flights of the aircraft. VOA's White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman reports pressure is growing on the administration of President Donald Trump to do the same.
Several U.S. senators are calling for the Federal Aviation Administration to order an immediate temporary grounding of the MAX 8 jet. Among them, Republican Senator Mitt Romney of Utah.
I think it makes sense to ground the aircraft until we have better information.
White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders says the U.S. government is in the early stages of its investigation into the jet's second crash in Ethiopia, which on Sunday killed all 157 people on board. President Trump on Twitter on Tuesday complained airplanes are becoming far too complex to fly, but he did not call for grounding the MAX 8, which has a unique computerized anti-stall system. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
Thank you, Steve. Well, U.S. President Donald Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, was sentenced to an additional 3.5 years by a federal judge today in Washington after pleading guilty to two conspiracy charges linked to his lobbying efforts in Ukraine for a pro-Russian political party. Judge Amy Berman Jackson attached the new sentence on to the 47-month term a federal judge in Virginia imposed on Manafort last week for financial crimes. Among some of the top stories in the world, opposition and rights activists in Bangladesh say police made up criminal complaints involving bombing and terrorism charges filed against tens of thousands of suspects. Electricity in Venezuela remains intermittent more than 6 days after the start of a blackout that left almost the entire country in darkness. And 8 people are missing after the vehicles they were traveling in were hit by mudslides along a highway in central Peru. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition. The U.S. State Department is painting a grim picture of violations and abuses in countries that have already dismal records in its country reports on human rights practices for 2018. On Venezuela, the report cited extrajudicial killings, the stifling of free expression, and restrictions on political participation. It said last year's presidential vote that reelected Nicolas Maduro was deeply flawed. On Iran, the report said the government's human rights record remained extremely extremely poor and worsened in several key areas. On China, the State Department's human rights report said the government significantly intensified its campaign of mass detention of members of Muslim minority groups in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. China says it is running a de-radicalization program and that the camps are vocational training centers to teach people about the law and the Mandarin language. While the Independent International Commission of Inquiry on Syria warns peace has not returned, and it's neither safe nor sustainable for Syria's nearly 12 million refugees and internally displaced people to go back to their homes of origin. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where the commission's report is under review at the UN Human Rights Council.
Syria is entering its ninth year of conflict this week. The crisis is not over. Syrian government forces, with the aid of their Russian allies, have pacified large swathes of territory, but the war has not been won. Chair of the Independent Commission, Paolo Pinheiro, says scores of civilians continue to be killed and maimed in Idlib and western Aleppo by pro-government forces, as well as by the Syrian Democratic Forces and international coalition fighting to regain control of Islamic State's last stronghold in Deir al-Zor.
Violations of international human rights and international human rights law by all sides remain rampant, creating multiple security vacuums and thus fertile soil for future escalations.
The commission finds persecution, discrimination, and other forms of ill treatment are widespread. It says arbitrary arrests, detentions, and executions continue in government-controlled areas. It notes armed groups and terrorist organizations also unlawfully detain or kidnap civilians in Idlib and Afrin for expressing political dissent or for ransom. Pinheiro says military objectives are placed above civilian governance by all parties to this conflict, creating a vacuum of the rule of law in parts of the country.
Lack of security, of rule of law, of access to basic service, of reconstruction and overall prospects all undermine the feasibility of safe and sustainable return.
The Syrian ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Hussam Eden Allah, told the council his country does not recognize the mandate of the Commission of Inquiry and said it should not be renewed. He turned his ire on the council itself, saying the UN body continuously targeted his country to promote geopolitical agendas that have nothing to do with human rights. He added the debate of the commission report was a clear example of politicized practice. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA's International Edition.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
This is VOA's International Edition. Arab citizens of Israel have been expressing anger over recent comments by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who said Israel is not a country of all its citizens. Some Israeli Arabs are calling for a boycott of Israel's election. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
The first shots of the battle played out on Instagram, with actress and model Rotem Sela posting, "When the hell will someone in the government convey to the public that Israel is a state of all its citizens?" Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu quickly responded, "Dear Rotem, an important correction. Israel is not a state of all its citizens. According to the nation-state law we passed, Israel is the nation-state of the Jewish people and not anyone else." The exchange comes less than 2 months before the Israeli elections and infuriated Arab citizens of Israel, who make up 20% of Israeli voters. It comes after the Israeli Election Commission said that one Arab party, Balad, cannot run in the election because its members allegedly support terrorism, a charge they deny. At the same time, the commission approved an extremist Jewish party that calls for Arabs to leave Israel. Aida Tumi Suleiman, an Israeli Arab Knesset member, said the election is crucial for the future of democracy in Israel.
The next government will determine if this country is going a little bit to the situation of democracy, of human rights, of equality, or is it going to be clearly an apartheid regime with legal system that is supporting the practices of an apartheid regime.
She said her party is appealing to the Supreme Court against the decision to bar the Arab party Balad. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Well, convicted child abuser Cardinal George Pell, a former senior advisor to the Pope, has been jailed for 6 years for sexually abusing two altar boys in Australia. He is the most senior Catholic official to be convicted of such offenses. He has appealed against his conviction, arguing his trial had a fundamental irregularity. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Cardinal George Pell was told he'd shown breathtaking arrogance and a callous indifference to his victims when he sexually assaulted them at St Patrick's Cathedral in Melbourne in the 1990s. Pell was the city's archbishop at the time and was unanimously found guilty by a jury last December, a decision that couldn't be reported until last month for legal reasons. He's been sent to prison for 6 years, but could be eligible for parole in 3 years and 8 months. The Chief Judge, Peter Kidd, said the cardinal shouldn't be a scapegoat for the failings of the Catholic Church, which is facing a global child abuse crisis. The conviction of a man who was Australia's most powerful cleric has sent shockwaves through the church, where Pell was one of Pope Francis's closest advisers and a former Vatican treasurer. The 77-year-old Australian cleric had been seen as the church's third most powerful official. Judge Kidd said his crimes deserved a significant punishment.
While it is a matter of speculation as to how long you will live, the fact is that you are of advanced years and are entering the last phase of your life. Like anyone in the late 70s, your health will decline in time. I am conscious that the term of imprisonment, which I am about to impose upon you, carries with it a real, as distinct from theoretical, possibility that you may not live to be released from prison.
Pell has strenuously denied any wrongdoing. His appeal against his conviction is expected to begin in early June. His legal team has argued that the jury's verdict was unreasonable because it relied too heavily on the evidence of one person. Senior bishops from around the world gathered in Rome last month for an unprecedented summit into the global child abuse scandal. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, Rob McLean. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
The sun occasionally blasts massive amounts of high-energy particles, causing solar storms here on Earth. Fortunately, since our planet is surrounded by a protective atmosphere and magnetic fields, most of the harm is minimized. But there have been solar storms so severe that radio and satellite communications and even power grids were interrupted. Scientists at Sweden's Lund University, studying ice cores drilled deep into Greenland ice, found evidence of three powerful solar storms in the distant past. Their latest findings suggest a powerful solar storm hit Earth in 660 BC. The researchers say that if that storm took place today, it could have had severe effects on our high-tech society. They suggest more should be done to understand the potential harm these storms could cause. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.